And hello, everybody. Welcome back to the End Credits Radio Show here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I am your host, Adam A. Donaldson, and joining me today is...
Peter Salmon.
And welcome back to Peter Salmon, doing a twofer.
Oh, yeah. Two in a row.
Also, both movies that begin with P.
Oh, yeah. I never thought about that.
Yeah, it's just one of those weeks, I guess. this week's episode brought to you by the letter P. End Credits is a local movie show for local movie fans, and we are here every Wednesday at 2 p.m. to talk the latest in pop culture and review the newest movies, which this week will be the new sci-fi action reboot of The Predator. That's in the back half of the show. For the first half, we're going to talk about some recent news items from the past week, including Henry Cavill, who is out as Superman. John Hamm is in as Batman. What is going on in the DC Cinematic Universe? And then, should you still be buying discs? We'll wade back into that debate of discs over digital as we wonder if you've really bought a movie on iTunes and if Apple can just take it away anytime they want. And finally, to lead us into the review of The Predator, we'll talk about the controversy around the casting of a convicted sex offender and why Olivia Munn seemed to be the only person who cared. That controversy unfolded over TIFF, the Toronto International Film Festival, and that's where we're going to start this week. It concluded on Sunday. The usual festival awards were announced, but I think a lot of people not necessarily watch the movies to see, you know, what's cool and, you know, what might be unexpected, or they want to see what's going to have the most buzz coming out of this because of TIFF's past as a predictor of what is going to be Oscar-worthy material.
So there's always at least one.
Slumdog Millionaire, The King's Speech, even Shape of Water, all sort of came out of TIFF with big buzz. And according to Peter Howell, who is the renowned film reviewer of the Toronto Star, the ones we should be keeping our eye on is A Star is Born, directed by Bradley Cooper, and Roma, directed by Alfonso Cuarón.
Not the Ryan Gosling one? The upcoming Neil Armstrong? Okay.
Well, that's got buzz, and we'll talk about that one in a second.
Pre-TIFF buzz.
Yeah, but because it stars Ryan Gosling, it's directed by Damien Chazelle, but it just seems like at least the two Howell identified is A Star is Born and Roma. Mm-hmm.
A Star is Born is already starting to get buzz just in the Galaxy cinemas.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's going to do well. It's going to get a nom.
That'd be my guess. Trailer's on repeat. It's because it's Lady Gaga's first kind of serious role. Mm-hmm. She's been on, what's that show? American Horror Story.
In the Hills? Way, way, way back. It was acted. But yeah, this is her first major role.
I said American Horror Story, you counted with The Hills. And I will also add she was in a couple of Robert Rodriguez movies. I know she was in Machete Kills, a sequel to Machete. Okay. I mean, this is her.
One that seems right for her.
Yeah, it's a good one. It's a good place for her to sort of launch the serious, quote-unquote serious phase of her. And she had a documentary at TIFF a couple of years ago that was about her. So,
About her jazz or her classical music or something. Something she kind of dipped into.
But I think one of the things worth noting is that it's with Roma and A Star is Born, we have kind of like two good sort of examples of the new and the old. A Star is Born, of course, is like very lavish Hollywood. Bradley Cooper, a successful actor, trying his hand at directing. It's a passion project for him. It's a remake of a movie that was a remake of a movie.
And Lady Gaga, it's special in the sense the first one, Judy Garland.
Yep.
Second one, Barbara Streisand.
Yep.
Now Lady Gaga. So, like, two of the most famous people, right?
Right. Two of the most famous, like, acting, like, triple threat people.
Yeah. I bet Bradley Cooper really liked them growing up. It was just desiring to be the director.
Oh, no. And when Candace was on, we were talking about movies we were looking forward to, and she had A Star is Born on her list.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, you know, Bradley Cooper, yeah, he's a pretty face, but, you know, he's serious about the craft. And I think, I mean, this was a passion project for him. So he did Elephant Man on Broadway, and that was him living out a dream because he watched the David Lynch Elephant Man, and that was, like, what made him want to be an actor.
Wait, so he performed as Elephant Man on stage?
As John Merrick,
like,
yeah.
Recently or like pre, because Bowie did it briefly.
That was, no, this was back, this was a revival back in, I so one say of his earlier, 2013. Something earlier he did. No, no, this was like 2013.
Oh, okay.
This was like the same year he was nominated for, I think, American Sniper. Mm. So while he was like doing going back and forth to award shows, he was also doing Elephant Man on Broadway, but he did it without makeup.
Okay,
he just did it with like sort of body movement and body language.
Okay, I remember hearing about that. Yeah. I'm cool with that. I think if you still view him as Elephant Man, it means he's doing an even more remarkable of a job without having to wear a mask, right?
Yeah, but I think the real interesting one, especially in light of how certain quarters feel about Netflix, is Roma, which will debut on Netflix. Although there is going to be some theatrical, more than what Netflix usually does, theatrical showing. Because I know TIFF Bell Lightbox is going to be doing a Roma run when it comes out in the later this fall. But
so we could review it, and credits could review it.
We could review it,
yeah,
and
before big screens.
But there's been a sort of allergic reaction to taking Netflix seriously as a film distributor, because unlike Amazon, which does actually do like art house runs.
Yeah, like Big Sick, right?
Yeah, Netflix typically, you know, one or two theaters to give it some, like a pro forma theater release.
They release on DVDs every once in a while too, but yeah, they will probably slowly get rid of that.
But, well, I mean, it's also because I think Academy rules are you have to open in a theater during the calendar year to be eligible. And so it's kind of funny because a lot of studios will just do that. They'll open in two theaters in in New York and LA on December the 29th so that they can get the Oscar, their foot in the Oscar door.
Yeah.
And then, but Netflix does practically the same thing, and it's sort of the root of all evil.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Well, and in the past 2 years, Netflix films have, gotten Oscar noms and just a bunch of noms, so
yeah,
you know, I could see even why like a director like Alfonso would be totally okay with putting his film on Netflix.
Right. I mean, there's probably no doubt you're probably gonna get more eyes on Netflix, but it's a gamble too, because there is this air of illegitimacy that some quarters in the business, like the people who run Cannes, a lot of the European festivals actually are very anti-Netflix. And they're barely tolerant of Amazon, because Amazon actually makes an effort to put things in theaters. But
yeah,
still this very kind of, I don't want to say backwards, because I do think there's still value in the theatrical experience. But
oh yeah, that's why I'm glad he released it originally at, you know, like TIFF.
Yeah. But interestingly, Roma is already Mexico's submission for best foreign language film, so it's very likely to be going to the Oscars anyway.
Yeah, although Alfonso has already had numerous films nominated for best picture, so why does this one need to be best foreign film?
That's a good question. I guess because it's in Spanish.
Oh, it's a different language. Okay.
Foreign language, yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, it's that. And yeah, he won for Gravity.
Mm-hmm.
So he's he's Academy royalty, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were talking about First Man, which the the thing that came out of the TIFF for that was like, ooh, is there a shot of the American flag on the moon? And how how patriotic or unpatriotic is it if they did it, which is just bizarre. And there was a Vox article that we referred to, and we were preparing for the week, that's just like, it's a made-up controversy, because A, there is a couple of shots of the American flag on
There'd have to be.
Right. And B, this is something that has sort of stirred up people who don't see a movie create like a fake controversy. And the Vox article referred back to Darren Aronofsky's Noah, which said there's no reference to God in it, but there's actually numerous references to
the creator. The chosen, things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is,
I don't know why people are freaking. I think people are just mad because the main posters for it aren't just a huge American flag. You know, they just keep on reminding us that it's us that found the moon. It's us that got there first, and we get it.
You know what, though? It's so strange that what people consider in America consider patriotic. It's, you know, I would consider, you know, going to the moon in peace, and, you know, establishing the flag and putting it in there, and, you know, this huge scientific accomplishment that took, you know, millions of dollars and thousands, if not millions, of man hours, including unsung heroes who are just like sort of being sung now, people like Katherine Johnson, who, you know, did the actual number crunching to get Neil Armstrong there, versus, you know, Donald Trump hugging a flag.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, it's one.
Have we only seen him hugging one? We haven't seen him giving a little peck or anything like that?
Grabbing the flag by
A little dance?
By the stars. No, he. Yeah, I mean, one seems. The idea of it seems more patriotic than, like, the actual image of a presidential contender hugging, physically hugging a flag. But, I mean, that's maybe a debate that's unwinnable.
Well, the American flag being more subtle in the biopic, too, would make the state seem better, more, I don't know, just nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I could see why the director would want to make it, the representation of it being America, more minimal.
Right. And
then, a wider audience.
And Neil Armstrong's first words on the moon were, like, one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. It wasn't like, America, F yeah.
Yeah, one step for America, man. It wasn't that.
It's like, yeah, or it's like, hey, Russia, America got here first. Suck it. Or something, like, kind of vulgar like that. I mean, it's, you know, it's a more grown-up approach, but.
I do love that they picked Ryan Gosling, too, because he's Canadian, right?
He's from London.
Yeah, both Ryans are. Well, Ryan Reynolds, right? Yeah, Ryan Gosling.
Yeah.
The two Ryans.
Coast to coast.
Yeah, the only two Ryans.
Well, speaking of superheroes, the DCEU, which is films like, if you're not familiar with the lingo, it's films like Man of Steel, Batman v Superman, Justice League, Wonder Woman, Suicide Squad. They're all part of the DC
Aquaman
extended universe.
Just comes out like
Aquaman
in a month.
Comes out in a couple months. Yeah. But in the meantime, there's controversy because Henry Cavill is apparently out as Superman. They were apparently trying to get him to make a cameo appearance in the upcoming Shazam, and it did not work out. So apparently Warner Brothers, who owns DC and the DC movies, said, you know what, F the whole thing, and Henry Cavill, you can grow all the mustaches you want. And
so they kicked him out.
That's the rumor.
Okay.
That, you know, he wasn't going to play ball and be in Shazam.
Okay. Maybe. That's surprising. I would have just assumed it was him that decided to go against it because he's, you know.
Did you see the Instagram video he put up?
No. Was he mad?
No, it's just him and he's wearing a t-shirt that says Krypton Workout or something. but then he's like, he has this like mellow expression on his face. You can find this on Henry Cavill's Instagram.
Yeah.
He has this mellow expression on his face and he lifts up a Superman doll into frame and then lifts it back down again.
Oh.
Yeah.
Subtle but sad.
But this isn't the first casting choice, because as we said at the beginning, John Hamm's talking about, you know, he can be Batman. That's not official. That's just John Hamm going, I can be Batman. But the rumor mill's been churning a while that Ben Affleck doesn't want to do it anymore.
That would not surprise me at all. I was surprised he was in Justice League even. Or is he going to be an Aquaman? Has that been revealed?
I don't think there's any other the DC characters in Aquaman. I think that's an all Aquaman show.
Okay.
What's that face
we'll
for?
We'll see how it does.
You know what? I think a lot of people joke about Momoa, throwing it up in Justice League.
I got nothing with Jason
but,
Momoa.
You know, Aquaman is one of those characters where his defining characteristics, I think, mostly come from the old Super Friends cartoon. And, you know, Raj on Big Bang Theory having to play Aquaman in the group's Justice League cosplay and just basically whining how Aquaman sucks. And if anything, Jason Momoa, with his personality, gets to come in and you know, establish a character in a much more organic and original way than any actor.
Very original. I would never picture someone like him being Aquaman.
Right, but you can't walk into and play, Superman and start, like, going,
Yeah,
you know, blowing that up. That's a hard sell. You can't do that as Batman. As Aquaman, you can get away with it because there isn't sort of an established movie persona for Aquaman.
You can have more fun with it.
Yeah. But, you know, back to Henry Cavill, I feel like he's kind of being railroaded, because I think that I don't think the success or failure of those Superman movies is on him. I think
not at all.
Zack Snyder, because I've said this before, when you see Henry Cavill in other things, he is very charismatic and very...
Oh, Follow, which we reviewed, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Phenomenal.
Yeah, he's really, really good. And, even, you know, he's a villain in Followed, but he's still got that charm and charisma. Yeah.
Well, and a hero, and, well, obviously Superman, but Man from U.N.C.L.E. too, right?
Man from U.N.C.L.E. such a great example, because I think that came out the same year as Batman versus Superman. So you see, like, the two side-by-side where you see him, like, as Superman going...
Yeah, he's more spread about it.
Show your face again and I'll break you in half. And then you see him in, like, Man from U.N.C.L.E. and he's just, like, suave, debonair, Napoleon Solo guy. And it's as sad that sort of this has fallen on him to say, like, oh, Henry Cavill, you suck, you're out.
I were him, I would have lied and said it was my decision. You know, well, that would have actually made him look... well, that's what I assumed until you revealed it.
Well, here's the rub, though. There's nothing official. This was a Hollywood Reporter story. And Hollywood Reporter is more reputable than the average.
Yeah.
Like, you know, comicbooknews.ninja, you know, kind of site. But that reaction video on Instagram...
It shows that it's, you know, maybe there's a hint of the truth.
There's stuff is falling apart, and I think it would be sad because I think it would be awesome if we got a really great Superman movie, where they let Henry Cavill take the dower off, Amy Adams too as Lois Lane for that matter, because she can be like so bright and effervescent herself. Just like take the dower off, like have some fun with being Superman, and maybe
he should have done one more kind of final one, I think.
Well, who knows what'll happen? Because, I mean, the slate for the DC films is Aquaman, as we said, in December, and then Shazam, which does look like it might be fun. Zachary Levi as Shazam. And then Wonder Woman 1984 next year.
That'll be good. That'll be fun.
Yeah.
Well, it's a sequel, right?
It's a sequel, and I can't remember her name. That's so bad. The director of Wonder Woman is back. Yeah.
I just want to say at the end of the day I'm glad that not that they fired him, but I'm glad that he's not Superman anymore, because like we were saying, man, Fallout, films like that, he's got a lot more he could do.
Yeah, and you know, it's a lot more. Superman sometimes is...
I wasn't dissing Superman at all.
No, it's... but I'm Patty Jenkins was the director of Wonder Woman.
Oh yeah,
there's this, the curse of Superman, right? You know, like when you talk about George Reeves, Christopher Reeves, you know, what's... You know, Brendan Routh is...
Smallville dude.
Yeah, Smallville dude. What's he done lately? you know, I mean, other people, you could be Allison Mack from Smallville right now, but...
But see, they didn't do things like be in other, like, well-known films like Mission Impossible, right? So he... I know of.
Christopher Reeve did Children of the Corn.
Did he? Okay. Well, I don't know if that's comparable to Mission Impossible, but yeah.
Okay.
I got faith for you, Cavill.
There you go. You got Peter's endorsement. So there was a post on this site called Digital Bytes. It was responding to a Twitter feed from actually a Canadian guy who discovered that three movies he thought he bought on iTunes were discontinued or were taken from the were discontinued by the content provider, so he didn't have the movies he owned anymore. So, I mean, this raises again the... Should you be moving to digital or should you still be buying the physical disc? Because at least if you have the physical disc, you know you own the movie and some studio person is going to break into your house and take your disc back, which is the comparable thing of what happened here.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that, because you can get a disc scratched, right?
True.
And I think we're hearing now, or maybe it's just a rumor, like apparently some CDs from back when they first started are starting to kind of decay. In a weird way.
Yes.
I remember hearing about that. But maybe no,
depending
on
how they stored.
It's still more likely, to be able to maintain it longer than if you download it on iTunes or something.
Well, the lesson, I think the lesson that was on Digital Bits was like, make sure you have something downloaded, that you're not just keeping it on the cloud, because that's, you know, where it disappears. And if you buy something, make sure you download it and you have it like... Even on a drive you own and not just in the cloud.
If it's iTunes, though, even if it's a physical download, it's still fully within, like, iTunes, right?
Right.
It's not like a separate, you know,
No, you
file.
Have to play it in iTunes. Yeah, but, I mean, it's possible that you can still play it in iTunes if it's not, you know, still available through the iTunes store. You can still upload it. It's because it's still a readable file. But, yeah, that's the other thing is that they have the... I think it's MP4.
Yeah.
In the format for the iTunes stuff, so it's not, you can't really transfer it.
No,
to
you can't.
Other...
I've tried. It's hard.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
and it, other than that, like buying films on a computer, there's not really much else, right? Mm-hmm. Well, there is, but nothing as major as iTunes. Like, I you can purchase on Amazon, right? Yeah. But that's still, that's more streaming than actual a physical download. So I can see the craze over CDs, bringing them back.
You still have to play them in the appropriate app, though. You buy something on Google, you still play it in the Google Play. And
But without Wi-Fi, right?
Well, so I guess there's some option to download, too, if you can download it to go. I know some apps have that feature. Netflix has that feature.
Yeah, Netflix has that now, which is cool.
But what's interesting is the article, too, referred back to DivX, which is something they tried, where you bought a disc and then you basically paid for it every time you watched it. Like, it was like a rental. You had a physical disc, but you had to rent it every time. And that was kind of a failure.
Yeah, I can see. Why did they think that'd be a good idea?
They were trying new things.
Okay. Well, I mean, you didn't have to pay for it when you first got it?
You bought the disc for like $4 or $5.
Okay. And
then you pay like a buck or two every time you play it.
Okay.
But I mean, that went the way of the Dodo, but this is very much similar to that, where, you know, you have something until people at a studio like Disney, let's say, decide, like, no, you're not going to have access to this anymore because we're starting our own streaming service and we're going to put it on there or something like that. But it's, you know, it's just a reminder that, you know, we've come to depend so much on streaming, but, you know, there are still things you can't find on streaming.
Oh, there's still, yeah, a lot of things. Oh, I still go to Cinema One. There's a lot. Well, especially because the Canadian Netflix, it's not great. Well, like, it gets rid of things all the time. I had to buy all of Community because Netflix just got rid of it, right? So just like that iTunes incident.
Right. And that's another thing, too, is that stuff can come and go.
Yeah. No, CDs and DVDs are still needed for now.
It'd be nice if I kind of miss, like, the big selections and like Walmart and Best Buy and things, but it's, I mean, that's the era it is, sadly, but
Bikuzan has some nice things.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. speaking of not having nice things, there was a man named Steven Wilder Strigel who had a small role in The Predator. He is a friend of Shane Black's. But apparently Shane Black didn't realize that his friend had been pled guilty of two felonies, one for enticing a minor on a computer, and the other for risking injury to a child because he's a sex offender.
Yeah, that's awful. Jesus.
Yeah.
I read that he was a sex offender. I didn't know it was a minor and all that.
The girl was 14.
Evil man. How did the director not know about that? If they were actually friends, how did he not know about that?
Because, you know, we're having a conversation and you say to me, I'm going to jail for a couple of years, and I'm not going to go, okay, Peter, I guess I'll see you in a couple of years. My first question is obviously going to be, what did you do?
Yeah, or why have you been going to court so much? What's going on?
Yeah, you haven't been around much lately.
Yeah, I want to grab a coffee. Oh, I can't because you're going to court? Like, I don't know.
I'm pleading guilty to some charges. Okay.
So he's either lying about that or being friends with the guy. And I don't know why he would lie about being friends with them. So.
Right. It's... And I understand, like, the idea of, like, directors throwing their buddies' work and things. I mean, Kevin Smith built an empire on that.
Oh, yeah, so was Jason Mewes.
So was Adam Sandler. I don't know where David Spade or Rob Schneider would be today without Adam Sandler. But
oh, yeah. Oh, they all needed him, yeah. I don't know if Norm Macdonald did, but, yeah, they did.
But Norm Macdonald. The striking thing, though, is that there was one person who seemed to speak up about it. It was Olivia Munn. Kind of the only woman in the cast.
Well, did she deal with something herself?
What do you mean?
Like, with him? Did he sexually harass her?
No, no. He was in the scene with her.
Oh,
and she found out later about his past.
So she's just a hero.
Yeah.
Yeah, good for her.
But...
screw this guy.
But the controversy was that she was at TIFF. The Predator was at TIFF. And none of the castmates seemed to want to back her up. She did an interview with... The Hollywood Reporter, she did an interview with Jacob Tremblay, who's like 12 years old.
Yeah, but booming.
Right. But it's more famous than anyone here. But and then what it seemed to be was like people were avoiding her. because she had brought forward this controversy.
Could be.
Or she had identified this as a major area. To the credit of the studio, they cut the scene out of the film.
Mm-hmm.
But it still seemed like Olivia Munn was being punished.
It's TIFF. It could just be... we're Canada, right? Like, the Me Too affected us as well, but it just might not have affected the Toronto film industries as much. So maybe that's why they kind of ignored her.
Well,
they didn't feel the need that they do in the States because of the Me Too. At least
well,
in
there
Hollywood.
Was also, there was Gian Gameshi up here, which predated.
Oh, yeah, that. Yeah.
I mean, that predated Me Too by a year or two, but still, you know.
That did not seem to have enough of an effect on Canada because Gian Gameshi right now has that paper out, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But how many people care?
Yeah.
I mean, he's trying, but it seems like he has to try really, really hard.
Yeah.
Because he was like doing that like ambient noise podcast for a while. And
that's kind of cool, but yeah. but I don't support that at all.
And I wasn't talking about Q. but it seemed like, again, one of the problems was a woman brings forward a problem is kind of, while the studio took it seriously, her castmates and the director seemed to like write it off. And then Shane Black did not walk the red carpet for The Predator, did not stick around after the credits for The Predator. Because if you go to TIFF, you know, they usually do like a Q&A, a couple of minutes of Q&A.
He just wanted to avoid all that.
Right. And then last week before the big premiere of the film, he comes out and is very contrite and is talking openly about it.
Oh, that was good then.
But it's a week later.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It's, you know, we live in the era of, you know.
It's got to be right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. But this does not make, like, she it's baloney that nobody paid attention to her. But I did hear that Sterling K. Brown...
Right.
Started defending her a bit, kind of sticking up for her.
Yeah, he wasn't at TIFF because he's shooting his TV show.
Again, so. It was too much later then.
Well, no, I think you're right. He did come forward and publicly support her, but he wasn't one of the Predator people at TIFF. He because he has a full-time job on his TV show, and yeah, he's in every other movie. But yeah, it's sad. That she had to go through this alone, but she's found, you know, incredible support. Like, people have been very supportive of her.
Yeah.
Online, and she got a good reception on the Ellen show. So, I mean, it worked out well for her, but I think that it took too damn long for the other people involved in this movie, especially the director, to have her back.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And well, it's 2018. Like, we've had so many things happen that it's...
Yeah, it's like once a week.
Yeah, I can't even... imagine how they just kind of ignored her.
Right.
We still got a lot to do.
A lot of work to do.
Yeah.
And we've got a lot of work to do. We still have half a show left, and we are going to review The Predator itself after the break to warm you up. A little bit of internet ephemera, a little concoction called Predator the Musical. So enjoy, and we're going to come back with the review of The Predator. You're listening to End Credits here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
It's using the trees, watching and waiting, killing us off one by one. The chopper is close, but this thing is too fast. We won't make it, it's pointless to run. Talk. No more games.
I don't know what it was. The jungle came alive.
Go on.
It happened very fast. Not easy to describe. But you must have wounded it. Unless my eyes deceive. When the big man was killed, its blood was on the leaves.
If it bleeds, we can kill it. She discovered the key. There is proof we can wound it. So repeat after me. If it bleeds, we can kill it.
If it bleeds, we can kill it.
Here now, take a stand.
Here now, take a stand.
We can bring down this bastard.
We can bring down this bastard.
If we stick to the plan.
If it bleeds,
we can kill it.
Something's out there.
If it bleeds, we can kill it.
Three men out there at the most.
Am I the only one who's awake? I don't believe in goblins or ghosts that can lisp. Give me a break.
If it bleeds, we can kill it.
An expendable.
I say you now take a stand.
I won't come, why don't you?
So instead of complaining,
young ghost's not gonna
you should
work.
Give us a hand.
I got nothing better to do.
I saw it. I saw it, damn it. Those eyes, they disappeared. It cut down my friend and it ran while I emptied that gun.
If it bleeds,
I
can
saw
tell
it.
It.
I saw it, damn it.
Stop shaving, you don't have a beard.
That thing will come back, and when it does, I'm gonna have me some fun.
If it bleeds,
if it bleeds,
I'm gonna have me some fun.
If it bleeds, if it bleeds,
if it bleeds, we can kill it.
If it bleeds, we can kill it.
We can pull out the wind.
We can pull out the wind.
Set a trap for the monster.
Set a trap for the monster.
While we still have our skin.
While we still have our skin.
If it bleeds, we can kill it.
Three men out there.
I believe it can fall. When you're feeling downhearted, just remember the call. We can kill it. If it bleeds, I can kill it. Now it's all up to me. Mud all over my body, so the bastard can't see. It's a solo campaign now.
If it bleeds, we can kill it.
Get revenge for my name.
Get around.
Hawkins, Mac, and Ramirez.
If it bleeds, we can kill it.
Billy Dillon and Plain.
Chance for you to survive. Go. I got this.
It's the stupidest fucking thing I've ever heard.
Guess how it goes from there, I guess. that was a clip from The Predator, the new film from Shane Black, and it stars Boyd Holbrook, Trevante Rhodes, Jacob Tremblay, Keegan-Michael Key, Olivia Munn, Sterling K. Brown, Elfie Allen, and Thomas Jane. And Candace was looking forward to this more than I, because we're going back to the show we did for the fall preview. This was on her list. I don't know how she feels about it. But I know how I feel about it, and that was extremely disappointed.
I wasn't extremely disappointed, but yeah, it wasn't great. It wasn't great at all. There was a couple positives, but they did not overcome the numerous negatives.
Yeah, it's... I think there was an article I read after the movie where it kind of summed up. It just... There was the Predator in 1987 that starred Schwarzenegger... and then you had the Predator 2, and then you had the Alien versus Predator movies, and then you had Predators, which tried to reboot the franchise back in 2010, and then now we have this. And I think the conclusion we can come to in this six movie series is like there. And I think it's the same lesson we've learned from the Alien movies is that there's only so many ways
to do it.
We can make these movies, and I think. In the same way, Alien and Aliens are sort of like the only one of those movies that you can say are good, well and truly good. You can say that the others in the series do have their high points.
Well, yeah, I think Prometheus was pretty great.
Prometheus was aiming for something other than just being like an alien movie.
Yeah. Which, yeah, I guess it's out of the alien realm.
But for, and I think it's the same for the Predators. I think Predator is great, the original Predator. I think Predators had its moments, or at least had a bit of a broader idea. But the
rest
of these...
It was a fun attempt to make it different. It's set on the Predator's planet, right? So I appreciated that. I thought they could have pursued that.
Yeah. That's what made it interesting is that it's this... That movie is about Predators bringing big game... So to speak, from Earth. So you have Adrian Brody as like a mercenary, and you had Danny Trejo as like a sort of a Mexican cartel boss, and you had Topher Grace as like a serial killer, and so there was like a Yakuza guy, and a Russian enforcer.
Just
so
different representations of Earthlings and
of Earth bad boys.
Yeah, bad boys.
So. And it's set on an alien planet, and then Lawrence Fishburne is plays like this Colonel Kurtz character that's been on that planet too long. There were so many ideas in that, and it just feels like this suffers from what happens to a lot of legacy quills, what quote unquote legacy quills, like movies that are made as continuations decades after the original. So things like Independence Day or Jason Bourne, and I bring those two movies up because at the end of those movies. There's a scene that I wish was the start of what that movie should have been, where it introduces an idea that should have been the sequel idea rather than starting the whole thing over again.
Yeah.
And Predator,
I think they do make – Sterling K. Brown's character does make a couple references to previous ones.
Right.
Yeah.
It's inferred that at least Predator 1 and 2 are canon.
Yeah. That, definitely not Predators.
But that's another thing. That's a great thing. Like, I like that Sterling K. Brown character, this guy who's like a government agent, a black hat who's like...
He's probably the only reason I said that I didn't hate it as much as you.
Yeah.
But even his character, I think, was... He was great. It was a lot of fun. But as a singular character, I don't know if the character fully matched the rest of the film.
Right.
Like, he was way too... jokey. Like, he seemed more like he'd be a perfect villain in a comic book movie where they're allowed to be a bit silly and a bit funny.
Right.
Yeah.
No, and there's like about three different movies going on here at once. There's the story about the Boyd Holbrook as the Army Ranger and this.
Yeah, he's the central character, and I like him as an actor.
Yeah, he's interesting.
Yeah, his character was, I find, a bit too basic.
Yeah, he didn't bring a lot to
it. Didn't go in depth enough into it.
But he's thrown onto a bus with all these, they call themselves what do they call themselves? The Loonies.
The Loonies. And I don't want to sound mean, but they were a little loony.
Yeah.
They were a little loony.
Yeah. So there's that story going on. There's the Sterling K. Brown story, and like we're studying the Predators and their technology.
And if you're a fan of him, he is in it. A lot more than the trailers make it seem. Yeah. Or at least like when you go to Wikipedia and you go to cast, Sterling K. Brown is like at the bottom, but he was pretty central throughout it all.
He was very central. And then the third story involves Boyd Holbrook's son, who's played by Jacob Tremblay, who has Asperger's, or he's on the autism spectrum somehow, but he's able to sort of make heads and tails of the Predator technology in a way that Sterling K. Brown's team has not.
I almost thought it was going to end up like he was an alien or something because he was very intelligent. He was like, Tony Stark kind of.
Yeah.
He could be a billionaire with his his mind.
Right, and that's an interesting thing that's played with the film. Olivia Munn plays like an evolutionary biologist, and she says like, there are some people who think that people who are on the spectrum are actually evolution people
have evolved.
Evolved human beings and not someone suffering a disorder. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, that's another little idea that's sort of played around a bit.
Well, the good doctor, right? That Freddie Highmore, he has it as well, but he also has something else that's in the same spectrum that literally by every definition is, and I guess you are a genius.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It's just, there's a lot going on in the movie that, and none of it feels like it coalesces. It all feels like, when we're kind of rubbing up against storylines, a predator shows up and there's a fight.
Some of the storylines don't really kind of bump into each other in a proper way. Mm-hmm. Like there's also, I guess she has a ridiculously mini storyline, but the wife, Quinn's wife, right?
Yeah.
His name? Yeah, Quinn's wife. The way
that's more or less what she's credited as, Quinn's wife.
Yeah.
played by Yvonne Strahovski.
Yeah,
a great
from
actress.
Handmaid's Tale. Yeah. It's phenomenal. That's why I was upset that she wasn't in it that much at all.
Yeah.
She was just a wife of Quinn who was not happy with him being a soldier.
Yeah, and she's pretty much there to just, like, to be in that scene where she knows his, she seems to know his service record backwards and forwards. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if that's, like, an army wife thing, but...
Maybe.
It could, yeah, but, I mean, that seems to be why she's she's sort of there.
Well, I don't feel how army wives would, or husbands, would feel about that either. Because, like, her one line is, he's not a great husband, but he's a great soldier. Mm. You know, as if she wanted him to focus more on that than being a good father and husband.
Well, I mean, it may be outside of our experience, you know, what people in those situations have to deal with. But I mean, that's another interesting direction the story could have taken, other than
a bit of a glimpse into his past, like what he had to deal with,
right? Especially since the boy is, you know, maybe a bit of more into the home dynamics. Since the boy is so pivotal to the goings on, but so much is going on at the margins, like with the predators. Because if you've seen the trailers, there's not just the old fashioned predator. There's also this like super predator, this ubermensch predator who.
So an interesting change,
right? And it's implied that the predators have been. They're not just hunting people for sport. And there's it was typical Shane Black, this sort of repeating conversation about like how. They shouldn't be called predators because predators don't kill for sport.
That was reoccurring. That was funny.
That was funny. And then Sterling K. Brown says, well, we took a vote and predator sounds cooler.
Yeah, it does.
But the predators aren't just hunting people for sport or species out in the universe for sport, that they're taking the best aspects of the species that they hunt and are integrating them into their own DNA. And that was an interesting direction. But again... It kind of goes nowhere because...
Mm-hmm. A lot of it goes nowhere. When I first started watching, there was a lot of things that interested me, but they just didn't go forth in a proper way.
Right.
A lot of it. Like Jacob Tremblay, I don't think he was in it enough. Maybe they did that on purpose because after The Room and things, you'd probably have to pay him bank, right? So, I don't know. And they didn't mention the autism or I don't want to say something like that until like the very end. They inferred towards it, I guess, but...
Well, it's showing... There's a scene where the bullies, knock over some chess boards. He's in the chess club or something, and then it shows him, like, putting all the chess pieces back to where they
were on the
board. And it took me a while to click on this, but the same bullies are always... Whenever they see him, they call him Asperger.
Okay. I should have gotten that.
No, I feel the same way. It was the scene later when he's trick-or-treating and they see him, they call him Asperger. I was I get what you're saying. But
that also shows, not using that term is a positive, but I was glad that this was straight up 18+. I was worried it was going to be more like, I guess, the past Godzilla where it's kind of 14A and there's not enough for it to get past the... crappiness of the acting and different storylines.
Well, I mean, I'm glad you mentioned that because one of the potential stories I was thinking about this week was Venom getting a PG-13 rating instead of the hard R, which is what they were supposed to be going for with that Venom movie.
Have they said what it's going to be? I guess the trailer
is PG-13.
Is it okay? So. Yikes!
We just burst Peter's bubble live on air.
That makes sense for Spider-Man films, man. But a Venom film, that'd be like if the Punisher film was...
Oh, was PG-13.
Yeah, it was PG-13. I don't think it was it?
No, I don't think it was either. Yeah. I'm trying to remember the Thomas Jane Punisher, but I think that was R.
But Predator was.
And Predator
I was glad about that.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine a Shane Black movie not being R-rated. I mean, I guess Iron Man 3 notwithstanding. But... I mean, going back to Iron Man 3, I know there are a lot of people out there who were disappointed in Iron Man 3 because it was too much like a Shane Black movie.
Yeah. Which is surprising because Disney usually... Like, they made Evan Goldberg backed out of Ant-Man when they were originally making it, right?
You mean Edgar Wright.
Yeah, Edgar Wright, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, so I'm surprised they gave Shane Black that...
That had a lot to do with Robert Downey Jr. being there to
give him,
get between
give him, some
him
power.
And Disney.
Yeah.
But still, I think now that we're sort of established that maybe RDJ had something to do with that, but that's the thing about Iron Man 3 is that it's a Shane Black movie set in the Marvel Universe. It's a Shane Black Iron Man movie, and I thought Shane Black taking on the Predator would be that. It would be Shane Black coming into the Predator and putting his own stamp on it. And he was teaming up with Fred Decker to write the script. And if you don't know Fred Decker, he's the co-writer and director of Monster Squad. He co-wrote that with Shane Black. So this was like a little bit of a potentially potent reteaming.
Yeah. More artistic control on their part.
Right. So if you like Monster Squad, theoretically, getting the team behind Monster Squad together to make a Predator movie should have been fascinating. But he seems to, I don't know, get lost in the dogma of the...
of the previous
get lost in like the idea of what a Predator movie is supposed to be versus what something different it can be, because I don't know what maybe happened behind the scenes, like that maybe he had an entirely different idea about what the Predator movie was supposed to be, but maybe the studio said no, we're just gonna get a bunch of guys with guns running around the woods.
Well, because Iron Man 3 wasn't that great, right? So,
well, I liked Iron Man 3.
No, I did too. But I mean, in comparison to the first two, like reviews, it objectively wasn't as good. So,
well, I think Iron Man 1 is probably one of the best of the Marvel movies.
Oh, yeah.
That's neither here nor there. But my desire was that could Shane Black put a stamp, like when you watch The Nice Guys or Kiss Kiss Bang Bang,
it's Shane Black's Nice
Guy. There is a voice to that, and this feels like
it doesn't have that vibe.
It's very work for hire. It's like, we're gonna get a Predator, we're gonna get some guys with guns, we're gonna go out into the woods in British Columbia. And that was another thing, it's like there's really nothing distinctive about the setting at all.
No,
because it's you know,
it's just trees everywhere. There's,
and that, we mentioned Smallville earlier. I'm more or less sure that the school Jacob Tremblay goes to is Smallville High.
Yeah. Okay. So that's a cool little tidbit.
Well, I'm not sure it's cool, but I mean, it seems like the one school in Vancouver area.
Also,
but...
there was one silly little joke on the school sign. It said PTA and STDs.
Yeah.
And it's like, I guess you're supposed to think that's like short for students.
Well, he also goes to Lawrence.
But where's the N in it, right?
Right.
STD. I think it was just a joke.
Yeah. Well, he also goes to Lawrence Gordon Middle School.
Yeah.
Which is, Lawrence Gordon was one of the original producers. And there's tons of little things like that. There's a scene where...
Yeah, that's my favorite thing about it, and this is a small positive in it. There was fun references to the first... I was about to say Predator.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Get to the chopper.
Yeah. Get to the chopper. They say that again.
And
Sterling K. Brown's character, who he represents from the first one, the guy in the first one is always smoking a cigar, right?
Right.
And the very first shot of Sterling K. Brown, he's chewing hardcore on some like nicotine gum, right? To get over
right.
it.
Right. Yeah.
So I thought that was.
The guy who sends Dutch on the mission.
Yeah. I thought that was fun. So there is little tidbits that. Predator fans will
like. It's worth noting Shane Black was an actor in the original Predator.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, he's the young buck, the first one who gets killed by the Predator.
Oh, the first one, okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was another reason. It's like, you know, if you were in a Predator movie, then, you know, 30 years ago, maybe it's been something you've been thinking about and contemplating for 30 years, like, what would I do if I got a Predator movie? And it's just, well, what you do is apparently what every Predator movie has done in the last 30 years. And that's, like, the most disappointing part of all of it, because
it's too basic. It's like all the other
it
ones.
It is too basic.
Yeah.
And if you're going to call it The Predator, it seems like you're saying something very distinctive. Like, the emphasis of the movie is going to be maybe on the creature. And we don't really
We don't learn anything new about the creature. This is also, he references like previous Predators coming, so it almost is in canon with at least, like you said, the first two. So they could have switched it up. They could have added some differences, but like you said, they just added, I guess, one new Predator, but they don't go into detail about him. So he's just like slightly bigger than the other one.
And they imply that the Predators have kept coming and are keep coming, and that their visits have sped up, and it's to do with, you know, them collecting DNA samples before humanity wipes itself out due to global climate change. And again,
they don't say why either. Like, is the Predator's planet going to explode or something? Like, why are they looking around everywhere for some cool little planet?
And I mean, that would be interesting too, because one of the things that makes Predator 2 stand out is that scene where they find this, you see the xenomorph skull on his trophy rack, and everyone's like, I know, Alien versus Predator.
I was hoping something of that nature would happen in this.
To open up the world more, to introduce a new creature, something more iconic, or something as iconic, to just try something.
Yeah.
Rather than just, you know, we're going back into the woods with our guns and the Predator's going to pick us off one at a time. And you get to the end. We won't spoil the end, but there's a detail in the end.
That's when I thought it was the alien.
Right.
It's a little present. And I was like, I hope that presence.
You know what I thought? You know what I thought? I thought it was going to be like a clone of Dutch or something.
Oh, that would have been really cool as well.
Because that would have been, you know, the first sort of human to kill a predator or something like that.
Yeah, but it's at the end. They give a hint that there might be a sequel. And if
Obviously want to make more of these. Yeah. But the question is this going to be as successful?
Yeah, because I think one of the main problems is after knowing it didn't do well, like Boyd Holbrook, he could do other things. He could make more bank, right? Like, he's in Narcos. He's doing fine.
He was in Logan.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's one thing I wanted to mention. The one cool little thing, he's the first one to get the Predator's machine on his one arm, right?
Right.
And it can shoot and things like that. And in Logan, his one arm is also a little machine weapon like that. So I don't know if that was on purpose, but I immediately thought of Logan.
Well, that was that was another potential direction. I thought, okay, this is going to be about a human. You know, he kills the Predator, takes his weapons, maybe learns how to use the weapons. Mm. And then the other bigger, better Predator comes, and it's going to be like more of an equal fight in terms of the technology. But again, that's not the direction
positive little things we are talking about do not make up for the awful acting, and not even awful acting, awful writing.
I don't think it was awful writing.
For a lot of the lines. Like Olivia Munn's character, she says to the one guy, "You should grow a pair of balls." I laughed, but I think that was a little silly.
I was laughing at your delivery.
Yeah.
But that was
such a just a bad line that you would hear in like B movies.
Right.
And I don't think it helped make up for the whole Olivia Munn thing, like what she revealed, right? I found that line so unsexist that it was a little sexist. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, but there's
and Quinn needs to help her character the whole time too.
Yeah,
like she's pretty bad A word, but
yeah,
she needs way too much help for him, and I don't think that was
what's interesting needed. Is I think this is maybe some of Olivia Munn's best work.
Oh, do you?
At least that's what I thought. It's like she, you know, it was a bit more than a damsel in distress thing. Although it's kind of implied that, you know, she escapes the facility. The Predator doesn't kill her because he doesn't kill unarmed women.
That was the first Predator they found, and he was one who was a scan. He was just a scanner, right? So I don't think his role was to kill.
But he killed everyone else in the frickin' facility.
Yeah, but I guess it was through. But he also sort of changed his mind, right?
Well,
I don't want any spoilers, but yeah, he liked her, and I think she was one of the best characters in it. But I feel she could have been more central.
But there was a lot of time spent on the loonies and developing their characters, and it's like there, you know, there's one guy with Tourette's, and there's one guy with, you know, a potty mouth.
Yeah. The guy with Tourette's is I only know him from Boogie Nights. He's an adult actor.
So that's Thomas Jane. Yeah.
They were fun. Their storyline was fun.
Yeah, I like,
but too much fun. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was like Sterling K. Brown's character was like, this was too goofy for Predator.
Right.
This is too goofy.
And the people
they picked, like, you got Theon Greyjoy there, and Keegan-Michael Key. It's just a really weird arrangement for the evil criminals. But
yeah,
they're great. But I don't know if it fits into the Predator.
I liked Trevante Rhodes as Nebraska. That was
Nebraska Williams, just his name.
Yeah,
it's just I love that name.
But you're right about Alfie Allen, because whenever I think of Alfie Allen, I don't really think of somebody who's badass. I think of someone who's like
a wimp.
It's not just Game of Thrones. It's John Wick too.
Yeah. I would have been funny if Olivia Munn's character about growing some balls was
to
his character.
Yeah.
But no, they're part of the storyline. The little convicts was fun.
Yeah, I mean, it just felt like it was almost like a different movie. Like he wanted to make something like Stripes.
They all felt like separate movies until like the very last 15 minutes.
Where it felt like a Predator movie.
Yeah.
And that's sort of not a compliment. But then it's, yeah, it seems like this mishmash of, you know, Shane Black impulses. And a studio desire just to have, like, something cool, big-budget Predator that they can then say, you know, here, we're going to make some more Predator movies. We're going to have a Predator universe, and we're going to have a Predator trilogy or, like, something. And I think it's just like the Alien movies. It's – unless somebody comes up with a really good idea on how to use the concept and the characters and the creatures, just leave it alone.
Yeah.
Like
Covenant itself was kind of, I wasn't a huge fan.
What I don't like about Covenant is that it makes the origin of the aliens so mundane.
Yeah, and I don't think it was what Ridley Scott intended.
I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, because he wanted kind of Prometheus just to turn into a whole new series, but
yeah,
whatever.
Whatever, indeed.
So yeah, the Predator, not good. Yeah. The only reason I didn't. Right after seeing Predator, I gave it, I think, like a 5 or a 6 out of 10. Mm. The only reason I gave it that high is because last week, Peppermint.
Mm.
Yeah. But I don't know, man. Now that we've watched the Predator, Peppermint, there's the fun seats.
Peppermint gets the Predator rebound. All right, that's it for this week's edition of the show. You can find more episodes of End Credits at our website, endcreditsradioshow.com. You can find us on social media at End Credits Radio Show on Facebook and End Credits Radio on Twitter, which means, Peter, people can find you where?
As per usual, Mr. Talarak, Twitter or YouTube.
Okay. And I will be back here on CFRU tomorrow at 5 p.m. for News and Politics on Open Source's Guelph with Scotty Hertz, and we're going to continue our municipal election candidate interviews. Mm. So stay tuned for who will be heard from next. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson or go to GuelphPolitico.ca. Stay tuned for more great programming here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio, and we'll be back here next Wednesday at 2 p.m. for more End Credits and fewer Predators, and we will see you then.